Hello and welcome back to the Research VR podcast. Today we have a new episode with Mr. Peter Lekoff.
Hi.
Mr. Christoph Izdebski.
Hi.
And I, Oz Balabanian. Hello. We have two hosts here actually from Germany, along with Peter and Christoph, from the Virtual Spice Company, which is a spin-off from the Salt and Pepper Software Solutions. Hello, Thomas Schuler.
Hi.
He is the head of VR at Virtual Spice, and Timo Zegelman, who is the CEO of Salt and Pepper.
Hello.
So, Peter, tell us why everybody is here and how we are all involved in being in this room together.
So, for the audience that have been following the podcast since a long time, you maybe know that Chris and me have a background of research, but we stopped doing hardcore research and moved on to the software solutions by Salt and Pepper. But we are not there just to do software, but to actually make sure that VR is helpful for engineers. So what we have been working on the last half year is the so-called concept of embodied engineering that we will explain today in the episode. And I think we should start from the beginning how this whole idea developed, because Salt and Pepper itself is an engineering company. And I think Timo can tell a little bit more about it.
Okay, thank you, Peter. I'm the founder of Salt and Pepper Software, and I get the vision to build a company for VR for engineers. And I think it's a good thing to use this technology for the engineering context. And 2 years ago, I get the chance to try the Oculus Rift. I think it's such a good device to test it for engineering or to use it for that. And then I met Thomas, and he can explain a lot of what our vision is about that.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be back on the podcast.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, that's right. He is a recurring guest here. You're probably one of our earliest guests.
The first one.
Wow.
Yeah, episode number 4, the medical VR.
Yeah, that's right. It was quite early. Yeah, so I'm working still with Salt and Pepper, and we have this virtual spice little plant growing in our department, and we're just about to spin it off. And so our idea is using virtual reality to help engineers plan production facilities, plan factory layouts, and plan actually how blue-collar workers will later build products in their facilities and using assembly stations, different machineries. And we think virtual reality is just a perfect technology to help that really be good.
But what is your background? It's actually not engineering, right?
No, you had me over in the 4th episode.
Right.
So my background is medical applications of virtual reality. I did a PhD in that area, and we used virtual reality technologies for stroke recovery. It's quite successful, already a long research body in the, you will find it in the web. But currently we really focus on the engineering part of virtual reality with our company.
So if I may interrupt, what is this engineering thing? From what I've heard, it sounds like a lot of manufacturing facilities that you're kind of trying to optimize. Mm-hmm. Is that what it means?
Exactly. So when you look at what the Salt and Pepper Holding is, it is a company that provides mostly engineers to external companies, like let's say Volkswagen, all those big guys like Miele or Bosch, right? So we have those engineers, over 400 in Germany, that go over and help them out with very difficult projects. So it means we have a lot of expertise there. Now, because we have the software department that also does certain custom VR things, we kind of developed an idea that there is such a big need, what we saw for the VR solutions. So we want to enable that. And one of those, as you mentioned, right, is actually the manufacturing process.
Right.
I guess Chris can also tell his vision on it.
So we are coming from cognitive science background, which gives us a unique understanding of the difficulty of creating virtual reality for engineers. If you create virtual reality for gaming, for entertainment, even for education, what really matters is how much fun you have from it, how much it sticks in your mind. So if you have a game in which you are a Superman, you want to feel like a Superman, but you don't want to behave like a Superman, because for that you would have a very long learning curve. What engineers really need from virtual reality, which was not available in the first wave of virtual reality, is the realistic interaction. Realistic in the sense that when you do this, you don't learn the wrong movement. You don't learn that it's very easy, but you actually have to go through the movement. So if you have a screw...
Just to clarify, these movements that you're talking about are the movements of the people that are working in these factories and facilities, mm-hmm. right?
It's exactly what the blue-collar worker is going to do. Mm-hmm. So if you have screws that you need to screw, like you have wheels that you mount and then you need to screw them with the screwdriver or with the driller, then you, in our applications, you have to grab the screwdriver, you have to put the screwdriver on the screw, and you actually rotate your wrist and hand as if you would have a screwdriver in your hand. In a game, the way it would be done is that you're touching the screw and pressing a button and you're happy because the animation is done for you and that's good. And if you do this for engineers, this is no different from the desktop application where you just press a button, like a next button, or you press the button on the wheel on the desktop application, which is already done.
Right.
But we want to go a step farther.
Exactly. And this is a concept that we are calling embodied engineering. And embodied because VR enables you this great opportunity to embody yourself in it. And when you think about an engineer who is doing his everyday work, right, and he's designing those factories, designing machines, it's hard for him to imagine how a normal person working there would do all those steps. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has it in mind, but what our software will do is enable them to perceive all the steps that you have to do from the eyes of a blue-collar worker, from his perspective. And at a certain point of time, you can also get the blue-collar worker out of the factory, put them in VR, and see how well they can manage.
Interesting. So it's almost like empathy from the engineer to the blue-collar worker.
Well, it's also ergonomy, because in a certain way, you want to make sure that people are not injured by the work environment that they're working in. I mean, it increases their effectivity, and this, you also prevent injuries, which is great, right? And when you can try it yourself out, and you will see that you cannot grab something without stretching, where you need to rotate all the time very strong. You can perceive it yourself as an engineer and prevent it there.
Very cool. So for your efforts, VR really needs to be a stand-up, move-around type of thing, right?
Yes.
You're using the Vive for that?
Yes, we're using the Vive for that and also the XMG backtop. We will link the video. So maybe it's the background.
The backtop. The laptop. Backpack laptop.
Exactly. Right? It's not a laptop and it's not a backpack. It's a backtop.
It's a backtop. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge computer, very powerful inside a backpack. We will link to it. Now, maybe for the audience as a background, Christoph, me, Timo, and Thomas are here in the Silicon Valley in a certain way, visiting mm-hmm. AZAD. Me and Chris since 5 weeks and Timo and Thomas since 2 weeks. We have been exploring the spirit here and also looking how people react to our ideas. And especially the backdrop was a very powerful device because people suddenly started to feel free. There are no cables. Everything is on your back, right?
Right. Yeah, you showed it to me a week or two ago. We did a cool stream of it, actually. That was really interesting on Upload Live on Facebook. I've never felt that I can like wear a Vive and actually spin around and just keep spinning without having an obstacle. That was like my most favorite part to it. What was probably the biggest space you've like done with lighthouses and walked? Have you tried it yet?
Now, the biggest that we use personally was 4x4 meters because we have a lot of windows and a very bright room in our showroom. It's not really easy to do more. And then again, it's a limitation of space. It's hard to find the bigger space.
It needs to be indoors and it needs to be big enough.
Exactly.
Yeah. We have to do some upload tomorrow before you guys leave. Seriously.
Yes, we do.
I know we've talked about it, but let's just like set this up. Try it.
Definitely.
Make the biggest. Okay.
And while we do this, space. We can live stream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just from the camera.
Yeah, why not?
But coming back to your question, we have colleagues that are also working on virtual reality in Osnabrück. And I talked to them and they had a joint effort of benchmarking how far you can go. And what they did was 12 by 12 meters.
Yeah, but with in a very good cable. Condition. In a very, very good condition.
12 meters?
No windows.
Which is
no
30 by 30 feet.
36?
Yeah, 36. So warehouse tracking, pretty much the next step.
Oh my god! Okay, yeah. Actually, the stress level zero people did. I remember 27 feet.
Mm.
That looked cool.
So I mean, we really try to push our technology very far. That's why we have actually been today at Meta and have looked at it. And
to where?
At Meta.
Meta.
Yes,
right.
And Meta. Yeah, in Meta. As you know, anyone who listens to this podcast since a long time, you know, some words are just very hard for me to pronounce, right?
Like Vive.
But I want to actually thank everyone who we met here and also greet everyone who we met here in the Bay Area who actually know our podcast, because we have found...
That's right.
Yeah, we have found a lot of people actually knowing us, and you know, if you like us, rate us on iTunes.
It's been great meeting our friends that listen, you know, profusely throughout the times, and I think they share our vision as to why you need to dig a little bit deeper into virtual reality to fully understand.
That's our motto, right?
Heyo.
Heyo.
So Timo, it sounds like Salt and Pepper was a company before VR, obviously. How has this kind of started to change your thoughts as to, you know, where Salt and Pepper and just engineering in general is going? Do you see like kind of a future in it? And, or is it kind of a one part of Salt and Pepper that, you know, Thomas is working on and with Peter and Chris?
Good question. Sure. I see the future. We started with this company or with this department with some good guys you heard here. And I think we have the chance to get to disrupt this technology of engineering, maybe. Yesterday we visited Autodesk, and there we saw a lot of things what they are doing with virtual reality. But I think our idea, our vision is, or we get the chance with this vision to bring a new technology in the engineering context.
So we've been discussing this topic with Thomas a lot of times, especially here in US, and we came to a conclusion that manufacturing planning is really misunderstood even inside the manufacturing context, because most of the people perceive any design parts of the process in which the product is created by from the perspective of the product. And maybe Thomas can explain here a little more.
Maybe I give you guys a bit more of a background of what we learned from talking to our customers and talking to our colleague engineers. Usually what most people think first is if they hear the idea of virtual reality and engineering is product design, because you have the CAD software today, which is pretty much already 3D based. So everyone would simply think, okay, you use the headset as a different peripheral, and then you can see your products in virtual space. But what we learned from our engineers is that actually they are pretty good in this spatial understanding of things. So they think desktop tools are just the right thing to do product design for them. They might use the virtual reality headsets for viewing those things, certainly sometimes. But what they said to us, which would really help them, is if they could interact with the tools they built, and if they could immerse themselves in the product, in the process of building these tools. Because, I mean, certainly after the product design phase ended and you start thinking about the production of these products, every single error that you can make in this process will have a huge effect in the end, right? If you make something wrong in the design of a factory layout, and then changing the factory layout later on in the process would mean that you have to stop a running production process, and that's a huge error, right?
Yes.
So how, before, you know, any kind of VR was introduced into the mix, how do you go about to design a manufacturing plant in terms of, you know, how do you lay these things out?
Okay, so
so what's the problem and how are you fixing it? Right?
I guess the problem is that engineers go inside a real room and take paper boxes.
That's one of the points. Like currently, what you can do with digital technology is pretty much static. So you can lay out a factory layout, but you can't really see how things will go on a dynamic level, right? So what's going to be done in the factory? So you will have the ability to kind of lay out everything in a static picture, but there's no way to immerse yourself inside and then to see how things actually will work out in that factory. And one way, as you just described, Peter, of doing it today is kind of using an old factory building, for example, and then build card boxes out of your assembly stations inside it. It's a kind of physical card boxes. Imagine how much effort that takes to build assembly stations and production lines out of card boxes to make user tests with.
Just cardboard boxes to what kind of see the layout of like where each person would stand.
And now imagine you take the cardboard boxes and you put them inside VR. Okay, you saved space and time to put them there. But because you already work with VR, you can take your cut machines. So you have designed them anyway, throw them in. But because you already have the layout, in a certain way with the CAD machines, why don't take our solution and add interactions
to it? So there isn't much you almost need to develop from your standpoint. Like you have this is the not models. True. Well, okay. But ideally and theoretically, you have the models of whatever machines you'll be working
with. So engineers.
If you have a static view on it, yes. Like for the static part of it, everything is
there.
Oh,
I see, because then there's animations to
actually robotics. And that's interaction, and that's kind of how to use machinery, actually. I mean, the main thing I think that we are working on right now is we call it an affordance library. So you want to have a very low-level type of interaction that works with all different machineries, no matter which brand, no matter which manufacturer that you use, actually. I mean, it's it doesn't matter which machine you have. If you're able to press a button, to pull a lever, to interact with the screwdriver, if you have that affordance library, and we are able to kind of add these interaction points towards static machines, then you are actually able to use
them. From a technical perspective, there is also a certain issue with the format that the engineers are working at, because the CAD software is usually in the NURBS format. So you have rather mathematical formulas describing shapes. Now, when you want to put this in VR, you need to tessellate it. And tessellation usually takes time and also is not perfect and you do it automatically. So you end up spending a lot of manual work to make those objects optimized for VR. And this is also something we will address.
That's interesting. Well, yeah, you need to reduce the number of polygons.
Polygons and also the shape. The perfection. I mean, it also needs to look very good, right? Not photorealistic in a certain way, but realistic enough to believe and immerse yourself. Because immersion is one of the factors we're using, right?
Is immersion kind of a factor for your efforts? I mean, because I've been talking a lot about, like, not everything in VR needs to be immersive. It doesn't. There's some things that, like, it's just the efficiency and the tools that it provides to you already, the superpowers that it gives you. It doesn't matter if you feel here or there, as long as what you're doing produces the effect that you want it to do.
So what we are doing is aiming for optimal immersion for maximized presence. What that means
sounds
is
like a lot of buzzwords.
A lot of buzzwords.
You can explain it.
The point is
sounds like I'm at a meetup right now.
Well, we've been doing a little marketing here, so you know, buzzwords are still in our heads. So what the idea is that you don't have to have one-to-one representation of whatever you're doing in the real life. You don't have to have perfect audio. You don't have to have perfect visuals to create the level of presence that you need. We need our engineers, our designers to feel like a blue-collar worker while they stand on this workstation, which actually can be achieved with just a representation of the screw, with just the representation of the car part, with just the representation of the robot, which means I do not have to have the newest model of the KUKA robot there. I just need to have a robot that has the same number of axes, so dimensions of freedom where it can move, the same functionality. I need to have some assembly line that moves there and that is as high as I'm going to have it in a real world.
Today, if you want to design a workstation for a blue-collar worker to be most effective, it's not only about kind of having the shortest time span of doing stuff, but also of having a workstation layout that let the blue-collar worker also from an ergonomic perspective and also from a physical kind of human configuration perspective be most efficient for him, so that in the long run, he can still keep up with this efficiency because he kind of does physical correct movements that help him to really work on the product in a physical good way. So
one of the fascinating use cases you mentioned to me once was also measuring the mental effort that people have to put on the assembly line. So if the assembly sequence that you're doing on your workstation is too boring or not mixed enough, then you are going to be tired much faster than without it.
That's also an important use case, important view on this technology. It might enable the blue collar workers to better understand actually what their working processes that they go through will also affect in the long run. So. Yeah, it's very important for anyone who kind of works on a very precise task to understand what it means to perform the task in the later run, right? So with virtual reality, you would have an ability to teach the blue collar workers how the process, how the working processes that they go through affect building the product in the long run. Mm. So this is really important also to use virtual reality as a training tool, because then those workers can learn better how to do this, how to build the product.
How effective have you seen this to be, this the VR way of designing engineering?
So what's your stance, Timo?
Oh, it's a good question. Maybe you explain what you mean with it.
So the problem before was that it was all with cardboards, right? Yeah. And an inefficient way of kind of trying to design this. So you'd by integrating VR into the mix, I don't know how far you guys, I guess, have taken it so far, but from what you've seen and from, I guess, internal things.
I think the most important thing is that the people are, how we call it, embodify. You bring the people on the station, on the workstation, and this is a very big effort for everything in the construction, manufacturing, designing. And so I think it's a very big effort for everything.
Yeah, I believe it might have a really big effect to have that technology really in everyday working life of a production engineer. And this is also what this new technology could provide to us, right? I mean, these ideas were already there a couple of years. I mean, you had cave technologies, mm-hmm. quite expensive.
Sure.
Only the large companies were able to afford it. And actually, it's also not something that you can do, can use easily in everyday life, because, yeah, it might be somewhere in one room of your building and then you have to book it ahead and you have to go there. With these new virtual reality technologies, they are readily available at each desk, right? So every engineer is able to use just a couple of minutes every day to check whether what he's actually working on would work later.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a huge effect on saving costs that errors might introduce, right? So.
Maybe a question to you, Haas. You have seen our solution. You have seen a lot of different applications that are gaming, entertainment, and also functional. How do you see, especially the functional content that we are developing? Like,
It definitely has a lot of legs and has big future, and which is why, you know, the business side of VR is growing kind of at the scale that it is. I mean, games are cool and that's always going to get big.
And today came the PSVR out, right?
That's right. And yeah, that's like going to be a huge push for mainstream VR and mostly on the game side. I mean, functionally, I'm very interested in like the filmmaking tools, the audio tools, as well as music kind of synesthetic kind of experiences, and as well as collaboration. I think that's going to be a really big one for us. So, and yeah, every major company is jumping in on that, from IBM to Cisco. You know, these are not companies that you think of that are involved in VR, but they have, you know, somewhat sizable teams that are working on it. So both the business side of this whole industry is trying to figure out how this is going to fit into their workflow. And I'm sure the manufacturing engineering is not something that most people think about when they're, you know, considering this technology. But honestly, this fits really well with like what we've been using VR for right before in research and facilitating the research itself in VR, where you don't have to control all the environmental factors that you would otherwise, where you can just strap on the headset and you know what they're going to see in there. The room they're going to be in is going to be the same every time around. Which is why like we kind of got involved in VR as a tool. So, I mean, this is exciting stuff, and I'm glad. I hope this draws our listeners to start thinking of the different ways of like the visualization aspect of VR being really important, and the disconnect that happens between people that work together, of because they just don't understand each other's perspective.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I think, man, we have been talking now really much about the one use case in engineering that we are focusing as the company right now. But overall, I think during the past years, the tendency in this area was to kind of try to really make the process of engineering things more functionally predictable. And the tools that are there, the digital tools that use and that engineers use today, they are there to kind of make it mathematically correct, physically correct, and have an opportunity to physically simulate how a product will work in the later run. But what we really think is more important in the future is also to really have a more human-centered perspective of these type of things. So what is really important, if you design a product today, you want to have the ability to really early in the process see how people will interact with it. And this is, this is basically what embodiment is about. Mm. You want to dive into the process. You want to immerse yourself and to interact with these products on a very early stage in order to, let the people understand how human beings will interact with these products. And the human beings might be the actual users in the long run. So the customers, for example, a customer that buys a car wants to kind of try to figure out how to work with the car, how to use it. But on the, like, our special focus are the blue collar workers who also are in some kind users of the product because they kind of use the products and build the products, right? So there are a couple of use cases where this idea of embodiment inflects engineering processes. And this is really what we want to kind of start off with. So we want to build a platform for different use cases. The one that we described before is the one that we focus upon right now. But there are so many more use cases where embodiment in terms of engineering makes a huge sense, right?
Now, so far, we have been discussing very heavily on different details about engineering and other things. Maybe we should also take a moment and, because me and Chris have been here since 5 weeks and you guys since 2 weeks, kind of reflect a little bit on the trip here, because we were in a certain way outsiders, right? We are from Europe, so it is maybe a little bit slower, maybe a little bit different in a sense. And a lot of VR things, at least right now, seem to be mostly happening here. Like, not completely, there are still great European communities with VR, but a lot of things are here. And maybe we should, just give a perspective how we perceived it with some crazy time. Who wants to start?
Sounds like you do.
Me? My mind was blown away. I mean, this is my sense of the word. It's incredible. I see a lot of great potential here. And one fact that was, catching me a lot is, like, at Upload Collective, where Azad is, doing his amazing magic with the mixed reality videos. And most of the companies don't do entertainment that are sitting there. It's like a co-working space, right?
Yeah.
They're not doing entertainment.
No.
They're doing either hardware or some practical things.
I think we might have one game company.
Yeah. But it's like, also medical
out of 35 companies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the focus is not so strong there, especially in the disruptive field, on the gaming side, because games come and go, but tools that change our lives, something like Facebook, something like Skype, something like Windows, tools that are so disruptive in a way how we communicate, how we interact, those are the things that VR has a huge potential in. And I saw a lot of sparks here. They're very inspiring. Mm.
Sounds like Germany needs one of these guys.
Maybe there. What do you think, Timo? Does Germany need a spike?
I think it was a great time here for us all. We learned a lot about the Silicon Valley style and the spirit, the passion they have to disrupt some technologies. I think we have a very good idea, a good vision. We have a lot of knowledge for the engineering context. And so now we have to fly back tomorrow and you too on Friday to think a lot about the things we learned here. And then we have to bring the both things together, our engineering knowledge plus the spirit of the Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. I, as a CEO, has to thank the guys from Upload VR to host you two guys for the last weeks. I think we get a lot of good contacts, like Meta, mm-hmm. not Meta.
Yeah,
and we learned a lot about it. And so it was a great time. And I think it was not our last visit in the Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I mean, you just said we're going back, we regroup, and then we go back for another attack, right? We
kind of course.
Explored?
Yes. Correct. Great.
What do you think, Thomas?
Yeah, I think it was inspiring to be here. I really learned so many new things, and as Timo said, it's a different spirit, it's a different passion, and we certainly have to take some of it back home.
It's the electrifying part of it.
Yeah, it's electrifying, exactly. And I'm very impressed by how open this community is over here. It's so nice to be in contact with these people. And I mean,
what do you mean by open? As in, like, open-minded to, like,
crazy
different
ideas.
The crazy ideas.
But also open to share their ideas. Yeah. I mean, this is something that we maybe not have that much back there in Germany. I mean, it's also kind of growing over there, but over here, I mean, the people have so many good ideas, and they worked on them already for a long time, but they are willing to share them. And I think this is how economy works nowadays. It's more about cooperation and to kind of make the best out of dozens of ideas. I mean, it is very inspiring to see that, how people cooperate over here, how partnerships develop, and how people are willing to share everything. And I really like that very much. So.
Yeah, there's almost not a person that you could kind of like talk to and agree to go on a coffee little hangout and then sit down and talk about everything that you guys are working on, right?
Like,
because it's less about the idea itself and more about the execution, which in the end prevails. Like, it's not, you don't have to keep your idea a secret as a startup.
You need a good team and actually, the money to do it. But the ideas are
a very small part. And to actually do the execution right, it's usually not going to be you, just you and whoever you're working with. It's always.
What do you think, Chris? About
for me, Upload VR is a very nice small scale metaphor of Silicon Valley, because you go to Upload VR and every day there are so many things happening. You're inspired like every 5 minutes and you can gather 100 ideas a day. But then 5 weeks passed, and if you would have to develop something in that time, actually sit and do something, close yourself in a room, then you have two options. Either you stay home, or you don't finish things, because you just have 5,000 new ideas before you even try to do the first one.
Yeah,
can be overwhelming.
And what do you think more from your intrinsic perspective on the European guys, us? So you kind of, you were forced, or you invited us to talk to us and see what we are doing, how we are doing. And you maybe got also some insights about Europe.
I mean, I don't know too much about the European, business side or the startup side. As far as I know, there's a certain glass ceiling, which we've kind of spoken about before, where you can kind of see through the roof, but you can't go past it. I mean, the craziness of Silicon Valley is, it's kind of spreading, but it's all very contained here in terms of the fast-paced nature of it. And the collaborative aspect of it. I mean, I've seen it spread to Seattle, to even LA, and places like Austin, Texas, New York. I mean, there's a ton of like hubs at this point that are growing. I think that what really matters for that nature to be there is kind of the governmental and the societal aspects to it. Like, there's kind of a reason why the Silicon Valley is the Silicon Valley. And it was started in the 70s, where it was at the height of the counterculture of the hippies and whatnot that were happening. And along with that, the business counterculture came along with that. Mm-hmm. So, East Coast, you think New York, you think suits, you think 9 to 5, and everything is very orderly, and you have your role in a hierarchy of like 100 people. And then these computer companies started in the Silicon Valley. They had bean bags, they had beards, and they had, that counterculture has always remained true, and that's what kind of started to spark this startup craziness here, and that's really starting to spread. So I think there's good parts to the slow and efficient way of growing a business, which is the traditional way, and because at the end that's kind of like the more sustainable way, where 90% of startups actually fail, right? As crazy as and good as this sound, even if their idea is good and their team is good, but like they still, a lot of them fail. So there's something to kind of going and doing things on a steady pace than to raise millions of dollars and, just start throwing money at engineers and making it happen.
There's the money rain.
Yeah, there's things that'll be learned from both. But hopefully, I think for VR at how fast we want it to happen, it's good that it's kind of growing here, because you do need the crazy collaborations between the different industries to start forming for it to actually grow into something significant.
Actually, something that I learned during my trip here was a very, very good advice from Timo. In fact, to have a goal every day, right? To right. have goals in front of you. And I thought about establishing here as a podcast a certain rule that we ask our guests mm-hmm. and maybe reflect our own goals for VR. Like, what is your goal for VR?
What is the ultimate potential?
No, I'm not speaking about the ultimate potential from Ken Byte. By the way, Ken Byte is an awesome dude. We met him. We're actually going to be featured there soon.
That's right.
Embodied engineering stuff, so thank you very much for that. But what's your goal with VR, Chris?
My goal is to use virtual reality for doing more by doing less. So yes. using virtual reality as the performance tool, mm-hmm. like calendar changed my life, email changed my life, smartphone changed my life. Now I want virtual reality to change my life.
The question is whether it did a good or a bad change, but okay.
I'm faster and I can do more per day. So, and I remember about meetings, which is a nice improvement.
That's up for debate, actually, mm-hmm. the productivity mm-hmm. side of like however crazy amount of apps and things we mm-hmm. do have now. Are we actually more productive? It's kind of a philosophical question, but like,
yeah.
I don't know.
It's a shotgun approach to information, right?
Yeah.
What's your
like even Slack? I mean, Slack is supposed to make us more efficient, but you know,
yeah,
we have its issues.
It's true. But what's your goal for VR? You do your mixed reality.
Yeah. I guess at this point, my goal is to kind of make people look amazing and give them superpowers and give them the ability to share that with the world, which is why I make mixed reality videos,
which are really, really good, actually. Really impressed. Like, I had the chance, as not many listeners have, to look behind the curtains, what Azad is doing
behind the green curtains,
the green screen curtains. That's gorgeous. Thomas?
I want to see VR applied in everyday life. I mean, from my research background, I see there's a big body of research about virtual reality technology. And right now, the technology, actually the hardware technology, it matured. So I think it's just the right moment in time where all this kind of long background could be into a daily application. And that's what I'd like to see. Maybe to pick up on one thing that you just said, Azad, being that the productivity actually didn't really, I mean, what can VR do for productivity? Because this is something that we also actually aim for with our embodied engineering idea, is that what we want to be able to is that we want to make these manufacturing processes more productive. That doesn't only mean to make it mathematically more efficient, but it also means to make it from a human perspective more doable, right? So, and this you can only figure out if you dig deep inside your own products, right? So you have to immerse yourself and try it out. Otherwise, you will not find it out. So, yeah, that's my goal.
Timo?
Yesterday, we got the chance to meet some big, big investor companies in the Silicon Valley. And one person said that in the future, we want, or maybe we would like to be 30% of our lifetime in virtual reality. I hope that will not come true, because I think the interaction between real humans is more interesting, like to meet on Facebook virtual reality or something like this. It's a big market. My vision is to use this amazing technology to make sense for the people. And so this is the reason why we are here. Mm-hmm. Embodied engineering is for the engineers to make better processes or something like that. And the second thing is the medical part, to help people to fight against their pain or something like this. So my goal is to use this technology for something which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Should we call it a day, guys?
Yeah,
I think we should. Well, thank you guys again for listening into another episode of Research VR. Thank you guys for joining us and coming to the Silicon Valley. And
thank you, Timo, for making it possible.
Absolutely. I hope you have a good flight back.
Yes. Thank you for having us.
Good night.
Bye.